We are mostly live and completely local. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night. Bye. Bye-bye. Bye. All right. How you doing? Good to see you. My name is Ron Van Dam. This is the Ron Van Dam Show, starring Ron Van Dam, costuming by Ron Van Dam, makeup by Ron Van Dam, shoes by Ron Van Dam, concept by Ron Van Dam, scenery by Ron Van Dam, background dancers are the Ron Van Dam dancers. That's pretty much everything. Hi, good to see you. What a wonderful day it is today, huh? It's Thursday, August 28th, 2014, in the year of our Lord. So to speak. Pleasure. It's been a wonderful week. This is the last week of August. I'm saying things that are quite obvious. That's how I kill time. The earth revolves. Thank you very much. Thank you. One more day this week of the 29th, and you got your 30th on Saturday, your 31st on Sunday. And then, oh, smack daddy, on Monday, it's September, and it's Labor Day. It's the day that we celebrate labor by not laboring. Mm-hmm. It should be not working day, not Labor Day. Labor Day means that's the day that you do labor. Hey, what day is it today? It's Labor Day. It's Labor Day. It's the day for labor. No, it's the day not to do labor. As a matter of fact, they won't even pick up your garbage from the street. I'm sorry, I offended somebody. It's not garbage, it's rubbish. Sigh. And then school starts for a lot of town. School started this week already. School has started. School is in opening swing mode. And those little bastards, I mean kids, are back in school already. And I feel so sorry for them. So sorry, because I remember when I was a kid. I liked school, sorta. I liked certain subjects that I had. I liked writing and English. Math wasn't even too bad, although the teacher sucked. When teachers suck and the information is interesting, or the class subject is interesting, but the teacher sucks, it's really, they should be fired immediately. I wish I had the ability just to fire teachers, to walk up to them and say, you know, the subject's interesting, but I got to tell you something. You suck as a teacher. You don't make it interesting. You're dull. You're boring. You're monotone. You're kind of not a nice person. You're very full of yourself. Get out of my face. You're in the way of my education. A great teacher is a teacher that is motivating, puts a smile on your face, makes you want to learn, presents the information in an interesting manner, doesn't just stand there and say, all right, what'd you read last night? I'm going to ask you questions about what you read last night. Come on, my hamster could do that. Just get a job somewhere else. Telemarket somebody, but get out of the classroom. You're in the way. You're standing in the way of my education. But you can't get rid of teachers. I love teachers, by the way. I've got teachers in my family. A lot of teachers in my family. It's an incredibly wonderful position. They're underpaid. What are you talking about? They get a wonderful salary and they get the whole summer off. Yeah, but for the impact that they have upon a child's life, it's priceless. It is. I mean, when we think back to our childhood days, try to think back to that. The dinosaurs were roaming the earth. Think back to your childhood days and what do you think of? You think of school, right? Think of school. School and the first time you had sex. Those two things. More so school. And what do you think about school? Your favorite teachers. You remember the teachers you hated? Yes, some of them. But you remember your teachers. And some of those teachers, somewhere in your life, and I don't care whether you recognize it or not, just shut up and listen to me. Somewhere in your life, one of those teachers influenced you for the rest of your life. Gave you some kind of motivation. There's a phrase they say that you remembered. You wanted to have sex with them even though they were your teacher. That kind of thing. Something impressed you about that teacher, or how mature that person was, or how nice they were. Something lasted with you throughout your life. And you may say, no, I really don't even remember my teacher's names. But inside, you don't even know it. Inside you, there's a teacher lurking. So they're very, very important positions. So what I'm saying is, I like the teaching unions. I think that's a fine idea. I think the teachers need to be protected and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, if a teacher sucks, they really need to leave. Find another profession. Work in Macy's or something, you know. Be a perfume counter person, or, you know, if you're a guy, sell ties and jackets. I don't know. Just get another job. But don't be a teacher. That's too intricate a position. I've always said that it has nothing to do with the curriculum or the school building or how many kids are in the classroom or what color shirt you're wearing. It has nothing to do with any of that. The whole trick to this whole education stuff is to motivate the child to the point where they want to learn, where they want to get more information. That's the magic. That's the talent. Someone standing at the head of that classroom that makes you want to learn. So simple. So simple. And the state goes through these testings and all this rigmarole and no child left behind. Where's the child? I can't find them. I left them behind. Oh my God. No child left on the bus. Everybody gets a fair education. You can't have a day. All these educational programs, learn about things after dark, don't have a day. All this stuff is meaningless. Meaningless. You can have as many after school programs as you want, extra credit programs, whatever you call these stupid things. You can have as many as you want, give a child as much homework as you want. It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. All that's important is that when that kid's in that school environment, that they are motivated to do something or to learn something or to get more information. That's the whole key. Motivate the child. Make them want to learn. Present it in a manner in which they accept the information and actually crave it. Because kids crave information, man. That Google stuff shows. If kids don't know something, they don't just go to bed. They go to the computer of life, the streaming highway of information, the magical thing, and they Google or they Bing or they Yahoo or they do something, and they get that information. They pull out their smartphones and they punch in that inquiry, and it comes up with they immediately, boom. That's the wonderful thing about this generation, because there's so much information available. And for me too, when I have an inquiry about something, I get the answer right away. It's at my fingertips. Maybe wrong, but I get the information anyway. But it gives you that innate thirst for knowledge. So this is good. This is good. And that's what these teachers and these school systems need to tap on. Tap on, tap off a tapper. So all you school superintendents and you states and you cities and towns, you're going crazy trying to keep your kids in line. It's the simplest formula in the world. Make those teachers engaging. And if they're monotone and stupid and just lackadaisical and they just walk through the motions and walk through the curriculum and go through the books, get rid of them. Out of here, I say. Change that. Get them out. Get another job. go into tool and die manufacturing. I don't know. And that there's nothing wrong with tool and die manufacturing. I don't know what it is. I have no idea. I understand tool manufacturing, die. I don't. Who would want a job like that? What do you do for a living? I die. All right. I'm going to talk about something a little interesting today, depending on how much time I have. But before I do that, there's been a development in the Demoulas saga, as you know. Here we go again. The Demoulas sisters, they are the Demoulas cousins, Arthur T. and Arthur S., separated only by a letter, have been feuding, and there has been a resolve, this Market Basket thing, Market Basket supermarkets. There's many of them throughout Massachusetts and New Hampshire. They've been closed down, nothing on the shelf. There's been a strike. There's a feuding cousins who run the entire supermarket chain. An agreement has been reached. This is phenomenal because we thought this would never happen. Arthur T. Demoulas, whom everybody loved in the Market Basket chain, has made a bid for the Market Basket company. He is buying the Market Basket for $1.5 billion. Yeah. This is going to max out his credit card, but totally worth it. So the Market Basket Board of Directors are going over the contracts. This is going to be a done deal. The employees love this man. They are going to be ecstatic. They'll be drinking alcohol and champagne. Half of them will die from over-partying because it's such an incredible thing for them. Market Basket has said to its employees, go back to work. Management, go back to work. This is a done deal. Your supervisor, your owner, will be your beloved Arthur T. Demoulas. Ladies and gentlemen, the deli counter is open again. Interestingly enough, my deli number a month and a half ago was 923. They were only on 6. I think when the store is open, I could still be just only about a day away from getting to that deli counter. So, Yahoo, Google for me. It's been well over a month. It's been about 30 days since the saga has begun. 40 days, 45 days, I really don't know. I can't count. Maybe I should have stayed in school, but now the saga is ending. I don't have to do this anymore. And those that love the Market Basket can once again shop. Those that love to stand online for 6 days to get their deli meats, who love to walk down those narrow aisles so that other people can bump into your cart and ruin your shins. It's time to go back to work. That is so radical. Welcome back to the program. That's the Ryan Van Dam Show. How you doing? This is a podcast, by the way. I don't know if you know what that is, but that means that you can listen to this anytime you want during the day or the night. You can listen to it at 2, 3 in the morning. Totally don't care. I don't think anybody else does. And it's not necessarily live. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. You'll never know. There's a great freedom to this for me, as I had been doing terrestrial radio. That would be radio that took place on the Earth, which was FCC regulated. I no longer have those regulations. When I was doing the regular radio thing, I was supposed to talk politics. I hate politics. I've always hated politics. I actually hosted a lot of the political programs. I was a question and asker. I despise politicians, not personally, but the concept thereof. I think the people that go into politics are to be, well, not reprimanded so much as is praised for spending their time and some of their money in order to serve the public. I do believe that there's a large percent of them that do it for ego purposes. But basically, you're still spending your time and I really don't care. So kudos to them, but I just hate politics because it's maneuvering. You have to make everybody happy, but you can't make everybody happy. You have to, you believe in things, and if I don't believe in what you're believing in, then I oppose you, and you have to run again, and you have to please people so they'll vote for you, but don't please them because you got to keep your own views and opinions, and it's just a suck fest. So congratulations if you're in politics of any sort, if you're running for any particular seat, or you hold a seat, congratulations, you're a better person than I am. I just never like to talk about it. I think politics is a dirty situation. I don't like it. I don't want to talk about it. Get out of my face about it. But I love you people that do it. I really do. You're fantastic people. And many of them are my friends. Well, friends, that's a very loose term. They're very good acquaintances of mine. I like them. Friends, no. Would I put my life on the line for them? No. That's for your spouse or your husband or your wife to do, not for me. Anyway, so I hated talking politics, and I don't talk about that anymore. I have very strong opinions on the environment and on the structure of cities and towns and how they go about making their towns and cities successful and prosperous and safe, secure. I have great opinions on that. At the same time, I only live once, and to be honest with you, I spent way too much time pronouncing my opinions to the public, and I'm sick of that too. So here, I just get to talk, and I don't have to listen to your annoying little phone calls anymore. Although I did enjoy speaking to many of you, you know who you are. But I don't have to do that anymore. So this is just more relaxing for me. And you know what? It's all about me. There's no question about this. All right, here's I'm going to talk about something today that I think has been near and dear to my heart through my entire life, but I never really realized that until I started talking to people and started having relationships and listening to other people talk. And I realized that I, for some reason, don't curse. And it became fairly obvious to me, since I've been doing the podcast, I have the ability to curse if I wish. I don't know if you would find that to be attractive or funny or what, but I just don't do it. I don't talk like that really ever. If I'm in the company of other people that are cursing all the time, I might mutter a couple of those words because subconsciously I guess I'm trying to fit in, which is a pathetic thing to do. But I basically don't curse. I don't use the F word, the S words ever. I don't believe I've ever said it around my any of my family whatsoever. Certainly when I was growing up, my mother and father never cursed in front of me. I would never curse in front of them. That would be punishable by death. So I wasn't brought up that way, and I just don't do it. I started to do a little bit of it because it was podcasty to do, and a good acquaintance, I'll put him in the friend category, Mark Schepeta, he said to me just yesterday when we were doing the podcast from Charlie's Restaurant, he said to me, "Ron, you know, I got to tell you something." I said, "What? Does my breath stink?" He said, "Oh, no, it's as sweet as pie." Well, he didn't say that. I made that up. I said, "Well, what's the matter? Are my pants open?" He said, "No, and if they were, I wouldn't tell you." He said, "No, he says, I was listening to your podcast yesterday, and you did a few curse words. You said the bull blank word, and you said something else." And he says, "It just doesn't sound right." He says, "You don't curse well." I said, "What?" He says, "No." He says, "You don't curse well." He says, "You're not the cursing type, and you don't curse well." Well, I don't like to have deficiencies in any sense, but I guess that was somewhat a compliment. I said, "Well, you know, Mark, no, I don't curse well because I don't talk like that. I might use it for enunciation of a certain feeling or something like that." He says, "Yeah, but you don't do that normally." So I said, "Well, it's because you don't hear me curse, so you think it's odd. If people didn't know me and they heard me curse, they'd think I was totally normal." He says, "No, I don't think so, Ron." He says, it's like if you put on a plaid coat with puffy sleeves, you just wouldn't look good in it. It's just not you. So I started thinking about that. And it's true. I'll tell you a story. I went to New York City the end of last week, Thursday through Saturday, I think it was, Saturday night. And I got a deal on this hotel, very, very nice hotel. The Hotel Bella Claire, I believe it is, on West 77th Street and Broadway. Nice neighborhood, beautiful. I love New York, love walking the streets, beautiful. Get to the hotel, and part of the deal with the hotel is that you get two free tickets to the local comedy place. Local comedy place was no more than two blocks away. It was called Stand Up New York. And I walk over there with my girl that I took. And we walk in there, and we sit down. And there are people sitting there and of all ages. It's about 8 o'clock at night on a Thursday night. I'm sitting there in the comedy club. And they say, and now coming up to the stage, good evening and welcome to Stand Up New York. And the crowd goes, yay. It's not a big club. Maybe it fits 60 people tops. You know, it's not a big place. And now here's a man who's been on MTV, Bassity, and 515, Bobby Flippity. I don't know what the hell his name was. And a guy runs up on stage. First of all, if I were performing in front of a group of people, I dress accordingly. I'm not going to wear a three-piece suit or anything because it's a comedy club. But I would dress somewhat nicely, maybe a nice pair of pants, a nice shirt, or maybe even a jacket, you know, something that denotes the fact that I am performing in front of a group of people who have paid money to see me do this stuff. And I've done this before in the past, believe it or not, this performing stand-up stuff. But this guy gets up on the stage. He's got jeans on that look like he hasn't washed them in 7 years. And I'm not talking pre-washed. I'm talking about, like, never, ever washed. And there's holes in his jeans. It's the grunge look. It's the, I'm a bum, I don't have a home, I don't brush my teeth, my armpits stink, my feet smell look. And he's wearing a t-shirt that is so wrinkled, looks like an 18-wheeler just mulled him over and he kept crinkled up for 7 weeks. And then he's wearing this old ratty plaid shirt over his wrinkled t-shirt and messed up jeans. And immediately I'm saying to myself, holy crap, this guy is just like, what is your look, man? What are you trying to look as ugly as possible? Because it's working. So already I have great disdain for this quote-unquote comedian who is on MTV and Rafferty. He gets up there. The third word out of his mouth is the F word. I don't want to say it because I don't sound good saying it, but it's the F-U-C-K word. He uses this word not only as an adjective for every single noun. But the audience laughs. See, they think it's funny when a comedian uses curse words. They laugh at it for some reason. And I don't understand that. I never understood the reaction of an audience in laughing because someone's using curse words. Explain it to me if you could. Oh, that's right. I don't take phone calls. So here's what he's saying pretty much. Hey, how you doing? You're the greatest effing crowd I ever saw in my effing life. I get up in the effing morning this morning. I have some effing eggs with my effing fork. And I'm figuring, what am I going to put in my effing eggs? I'll make an effing omelet. So I go into the effing refrigerator and I get some effing SpaghettiOs. You ever have effing SpaghettiOs? Do you ever have effing spaghetti effing O's? And I put them in the effing pan and I fry the effing up. And then I sit down with my effing fork and I put it in my effing mouth. This is the way he talked. And the audience is going, oh, he's adorable. He is so lifelike. Oh, man. Then he starts with a routine, which is the cheapest routine in the books. But again, stupid audience. They're just falling for everything. I mean, they're not going crazy. They're just, they're doing the comedy club laugh where, oh, I'm in a comedy club. I should be laughing. That's it. That's pretty much, I should be laughing. I'm in a comedy club. I'm going to do it. I'm going to laugh. I don't care. I don't understand what he's saying. I'm just going to laugh because I'm a comedy club. It was effing not funny. And I started getting angry. And I started getting mad. And I say to my lady there, I say, I'm getting the F out of here. She says, don't do that. Don't say that. You don't talk like that. I said, I'm leaving. You can stay. I'm leaving. She says, oh, please, please. It may get funny. Then this guy, this low-life scumball, starts doing the pick on the audience bit. This is the reason that people don't sit in the first row in a comedy club. Hey, where are you from? Hey, what is that, an effing nose on your face? Where you got an effing snot coming out of your effing nose? What, are you effing gay? Are you effing oriental? Because I can make fun of your effing background with your effing culture. Isn't that funny that I just said that? Oh, ho, ho. I says, what are you wearing glasses for your effing eyes? Which effing eye is it? Blah, 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 blah. Hey, I'm holding up two fingers. Here's the middle one. And the audience is laughing at the fact that he's picking on people now until they pick on you. Then it's not funny, but everybody else laughs, so it pretty much equals out. So this guy's horrible. He's just horrible. I say to my lady, I say, you know, this guy's got no act. This is not funny. I mean, it's just awful. So she says, please, don't make a scene, please. Because she knows I can make a scene. Oh, I can make a scene. I'm a very laid-back, calm person. But if I get pissed off, I make a scene. I make a big scene. And I'm intimidating because no one expects it from me. I make a scene. I go, I get up, and I leave her there. And she can follow me if she'd like, but I'm pissed at everybody now. I'm pissed at the water glass in front of me. I'm just pissed at everything. Oh, by the way, the comedy tickets were free with the room, but it was a 2-drink minimum. And you had to have at least $20 worth of alcohol per person. And now I'm pissed at the hotel. Oh, you said it was free comedy tickets, but it's not free. It's $20 a person because that's the minimum to sit here. So I'm not drinking yet, man. I'm just having water because I ain't paying $20 to listen to this effing stuff. So I get up and I walk over to the guy that looked like the manager. The guy at the door collecting the tickets for which other people paid. And I said, this is horrible. Is this the way it's going to be all night? I said, he's saying effing this and effing that. And he said like the F word like 2,000 times and it's only been 3 minutes. And here's what the comedy club manager says to me, which really pissed me off. And it was the capper. It was the straw that broke the effing camel's back. He says to me, hey, I know they curse. It's a comedy club. And I turn around and I walk away because that was just so stupid to say, but I didn't realize the immensity of the stupidity of that comment. I accepted that. Like, yeah, it's a comedy club and people curse in a comedy club. But then I said to myself, wait a minute. This guy is saying to me that the only way you can have a comedy club is to curse. And I should have had it out with him. I should have had a verbal, intellectual thing out because I would have plastered him. But I didn't. But I did grab my lady person I was with by the arm. And we went to the bar that was outside of the comedy club area, where we proceeded to have not an argument, but a discussion about how prudish I am and how I don't curse and therefore nobody else should. And I said, look, you're the one that told me, and eventually Chepetta told me the same thing, that I don't curse well because I'm not the cursing type. I'm too laid back to be upset. Well, not that night. I like comedians. I write comedy myself. I respect them only when they can deliver a comedy routine without cursing. As soon as a comedian gets into excessive cursing, I discount them as gimmicky. And I don't care for them anymore. Because they can do that act without cursing, then they're funny. And there are many, many comedians that don't curse that are very popular. Some of the bigger ones, Bill Cosby, Seinfeld, Jim Gaffigan. There are tons of them. Stephen Wright. They're just funny. They don't curse. Others, it's through the whole act. So I took offense to that. I'm not a great cursor. I never will be. It's just the way I am. Now, that being said, there's this.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
Now that he is finally free of the constraints of terrestrial radio and into the anything-goes atmosphere of the podcasting world, we can finally say that Ron Van Dam is one badass motherfucker. What was that? Okay, that's the way it's going to be? Great. F*** you.
See,
you're listening to the f***ing Ron Van Dam show on Metro Self Podcasting. I didn't even say anything that time.
Yeah. See what I mean? That's what I'm talking about. Welcome back to the program. You know, Let's play a little game. Let's play a little game here. The game is called "Do You Think I'm an Asshole?" All right,
Ron, what did you just say?
I think I can say. See, I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with that because it's not the act of doing anything. That effing word is the act of sexual fornication, which is perfectly acceptable. It's how you make children. It's what you do for pleasure. If you're not religious, then you can't. It's the act of that. Somehow, the act of sexual fornication is something that we mutter that word in order to be angry and to show anger and frustration. I don't quite get that. I don't know why that F word, the act of fornication, is used in a cursing sense. Why is that so bad? I thought it's supposed to be good. Then the other word that is used is the SH word, which is the act of defecation. That makes more sense to me. Because a mound of that stuff, that solid defecation, that steamy, obnoxious pile of manure is not a pleasant situation. So I can understand using that word in order to accentuate one's total disdain. But to accentuate disdain by using the F word, which represents the act of sexual fornication, the act of giving birth to another life, or, again, without the religious connotation, the act of pleasure, between a man, a woman, a man, a man, woman, woman, whatever the case may be. I don't understand how that's a curse thing. That's a desirable thing. Anyway, okay, am I an asshole? And you can't call in, but if you see me on the street, don't yell out, "Hey, Ron, you're an asshole." Don't do that, because I understand that. Here's the question. Here's the question for you now. Listen carefully to me, please. So I go to this hotel. It's called the Hotel Bella Claire, 77th Street and Broadway. It's what they call a boutique hotel. I don't know why. When you walk in, it looks very nouveau-ish. It's a nouveau look. It's not old. It's not old brownstone. It's not a brand new building necessarily. It's just done in a very chic manner. And it's a beautiful lobby and front desk and all that, and a bank of elevators. And you go up to the room, and the room is beautiful. No carpeting in the room. It's all hardwood floors. Very nice. A nice bathroom with a glass-enclosed shower, one of those ritzy glass-enclosed things. Beautiful sink and a good-sized bathroom. And very, very nice bed with a cushy plush leather headboard. A very, very nice room. And I come to understand, and I'll tell you how soon, come to understand that these rooms were actually very recently refurbished to the point where we could have been the first couple in that room since the refurbishment. Very, very nice room. Very, very happy with the place. We get in there, and we get there on a Thursday. We're about to go down to this comedy club, of which the story already told you. Did not see it, and wasn't supposed to, but my lady person that I brought with me, whom I know quite well, in a romantic sense, walks into the room and tries the bed. And as she's walking by the side of the bed, she goes, "Ow!" And she didn't even use a curse word, which I respect her for. I said, "What's the matter?" She says, "Oh my God, my ankle." And I look at her ankle, it's bleeding. There's a gash in her ankle. I said, "My God." She says, "Yes, there's something protruding from the side of the bed." And I look down, there's a part of the bed frame sticking out into the room when you walk by the side of the bed. And the ends are fairly sharp. Not metal sharp, but there's an edge to them. And she's bleeding. She's not profusely bleeding all over the floor. It's not rubbing down her leg or anything. It's black and blue, and it's a bump gash. And I said, "Oh my God, this is like unheard of. How could a hotel have a metal piece protruding from a bed frame into the aisle of the side of the bed?" I run over to the house phone. It's, by the way, the only place you'll find a house phone in the world is in a hotel. I dial 0 automatically without even thinking to get the front desk, and they picked up. And I said, my wife has been injured by something protruding from the side of your bed. And the front desk goes, oh my God. And they send people up. They send people up. I mean, their response is very good. They even sent a guy who works for the hotel, who I guess is their handyman, and he comes up with a metal saw, and he saws off this metal piece so it's not sticking out, and he buffs it down. I mean, they do an immediate job, and they say to my lady, they say, "Do you need to go to a hospital?" I said, "No, it's not that kind of thing, but it did break the skin, and it is going to be black and blue." And they say, "Oh, we apologize. Is there anything we can do?" And I said, "Yeah, do you have a first aid kit?" And they said, "Yeah, yeah." So, I mean, they responded very well. So, the next day, I'm saying to myself, you know, as nice as these people are, there was a metal piece protruding from the bed, and there was an injury. I want satisfaction. This is where we start to get into the game that we're playing called Am I an Asshole? I go down to the front desk the next day and I say, that was last night and this is in the morning. I say to the manager, you're aware that there was an incident last night in my room where there was an injury caused by the hotel by something protruding from the bed, a metal piece. He said, yes, we're very, very aware of this, Mr. Van Dam. I said, all right. And I continued to walk out to go about my New York day. As I'm doing it, I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Shouldn't they have said, like, we're so sorry, Mr. Van Dam, we're going to comp the room for the night, or is there anything we can do to financially recompense you? They didn't do that. So when I came back from my New York day, I went to the front desk again. I said, you know, referring to the, I don't want to be an asshole, but referring to the incident that occurred last night here in the hotel, is the hotel planning to compensate me somehow for my troubles or for the troubles of my lady? And the nighttime manager says, well, we'll come up with something and we'll tell you in the morning. And I'm thinking, man, you know, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, you should have had somebody in my room, like, offering me, like, gifts and flowers and free cars and everything. So the next morning, I'm about to leave, and I say, well, you know, I'm leaving now. Is there any compensation for what happened the night before last? And I says, oh, yes, we're going to comp your parking, and we're going to comp all your hotel taxes. The hotel taxes came to about $75, so that's a good comp. The parking was $45 a night, so that's like $90 right there. So they've comped me about $150. And I said to myself, okay, I mean, you know, my lady's leg is not falling off and stuff, and the hotel caused the injury. They didn't do it on purpose. It was an oversight that they didn't put the bed frame together properly or something like that. I really don't know what it was. Never explained it. And I just left. Now, here's where the asshole part comes in. I get back, and on my email, it's from the Hotel Bella Claire, and it's a survey. And the title of the email is, how would you rate us? How would I rate you? Wow. Stand back. I'm getting in asshole mode right now. I open up the email and there's a survey. It's a little difficult to maneuver through the survey because it says, how is the staff? How is the front desk? How is the appearance of the hotel? Was the bed comfortable? Was the bathroom nice? I mean, I have to say yes to all of that because it was a fine hotel and it was good. But then at the end of the survey, it says, additional comments. Oh, you don't want to know. I additional comment that thing away. I'm additionally commenting like there's no tomorrow. I recount the whole situation. Yesterday, I got an email from the Hotel Bella Claire, from the head manager. I thought, okay, finally. And the email says, thank you for completing the survey. The Hotel Bella Claire appreciates your participation. That pissed me off. How dare you? That's a form letter response. I took the time in additional comments to tell you of a harrowing incident that occurred to me in your hotel, and you return that email with a form letter. Thanks for the survey. Thanks for filling out the survey. I'm becoming an asshole now. So I email back this guy. I got his name now. I email him back. Scott. I say, thank you for your email saying that you thanked me for responding, but there was a problem at your hotel, as you well may be aware of, where injury was caused by your hotel. There was no reference in your prior email to that incident, and the fact that you didn't even mention it and sent me a form response is a bit insulting. Ron, here goes Ron. See, Ron does the pen is mightier than the sword, and he does it rather well. But I'm thinking as I'm hitting that send thing on the computer of fun, I'm thinking, all right, Ron, you've opened up the can of asshole worms. Well, within about half an hour, I get a response from Scott at the Hotel Bella Claire, the head manager. And he says, we greatly apologize for the incident. We're well aware of it. We greatly apologize. If there's any way that we can further assist you, please do not hesitate. Oh, what? What? If there's any way that you can further assist me? What kind of bull thing is that? Well, I write him back immediately. Now I'm in full mode. I'm in full mode. And I know it's starting to get away from it now. I'm starting to get engaging in verbal battle as opposed to realizing if I'm being an asshole or not. But I don't care anymore. I email him back and I say, it is not a question as to whether I think you can assist me in any further manner. It is more a question of what you wish to do about the incident that your hotel is responsible for. And then I attach two pictures that I very cleverly took of the night of the incident of the protruding metal piece and also the wounded leg, the wounded ankle. And I emailed that over to them. And I also said in that email, you know, I would have expected to be comped not to have paid for that first night at all because of the incident that occurred and the fault of your hotel. And I finished the email by saying, it is your move to apologize and compensate. And I'm saying to myself, and then I hit send, and I'm saying to myself, Ron, what did you mean by that? I don't know. I don't know what I meant. Was I threatening him with legal action? I don't know. Was I doing that? I don't know. I mean to, but did I do that? Am I being an asshole? Or am I standing up for something that occurred that was totally not my fault, that a institution such as a hotel should take full responsibility for and be like tripping over me with kindness and showering me with gifts? Should I expect that from my business? Or am I being a total asshole? Should I just have let it go and said, okay, they're nice people. Stuff happens. Let it go, Ron. They gave you like $150 back, you know, in services that you didn't have to pay for. Enough is enough. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Leave them alone. But something inside me says, no, no, they're at fault and they need to pay for it. And I want satisfaction. I have a friend whom I used to go to lunch with a lot, and I don't anymore. And the friend, I won't say what religious persuasion this friend is, but I think by saying that, I've just said it. It's the connotation of this particular religious group, which I, by the way, find to be quite true. Being a member of that particular, not religion, I'm not a member of any religion really, but that, you know, I was brought up in that religion, and I totally agree with this particular problem that a lot of them have. It's called restaurant superiority. And my stepfather had this problem too. My stepfather from like the age 13 on, I had a stepfather, nice guy, but very full of himself. He was a businessman, and whenever he took us to a restaurant, he had to find some fault with the restaurant. He had to find some fault with the food oh, this isn't hot enough. Excuse me, I ordered mashed potatoes. They don't seem to be really mashed. They're kind of chunky. I asked for a lemon in my water. Could I have the lemon, please? Had to find something wrong with everything. And there was nothing really wrong with anything. I think he was just showing the fact that he was superior over the server, which really bothers me. Because I worked in a restaurant for a very short period of time. And servers are, you know, you don't want that. You don't want to hear that crap from customers. There's no reason for that. Just picky people. Like, oh, you know, I'd like to have a glass of water, but no ice cubes, please. The ice cubes give me acid reflux, and my doctor told me I couldn't have ice, so I really don't want... Okay, all right, no ice. Stop it with your whole life story with the ice. Enough. I'm your server. I'm not your psychologist, lady. But now my stepfather used to go one step further. And he called all the female waitresses, all the female servers, called them all honey and sweetie. I find that to be demeaning. Now, if your server calls you honey or sweetie, that's okay. They're going for the tips. But not the other way around. You don't, customer doesn't call some wait staff honey and sweetie. So I have a great problem with that. But after this hotel incident, I'm wondering, am I acting like that? I'm not calling anybody honey or sweetie, but am I being an asshole? Am I? Am I carrying things too far? Am I taking advantage of an incident that I didn't cause, but am I playing it out too far? Or am I justified in what I'm doing? Drop me a line and let me know. Because I really don't know. I'm in a quandary about this particular phase of my personality that doesn't come out very often. But apparently when it does, it comes out with a vengeance. And I can't let go. Like an attack dog. You can contact me at MetroSouthPodcasting@AOL.com. That's MetroSouthPodcasting. All one word, as they say. MetroSouthPodcasting@AOL.com. Yeah, I'm the only person left on AOL. That's right. Let me know. Am I being an asshole? And not as a joke. Am I carrying this too far with this hotel thing? All right. I'm out of time for today. You've been wonderful to put up with me and to listen to my foibles. My foibles. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I do wish you peace.